Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. And if you are a regular follower of our program, you'll know that this week is our Ramkatha Rasavahini, where we talk about the beautiful and glorious stories of Lord Rama.
Shri Raghavam Dasharatatmajama Prameyam Sitapatim Raghukulanmaya Ratnadeepam Janubahum Aravindadalayataksham Ramam Nishachara Vina Shakaram Namami Namami
Sairam, dear listeners, I'm Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and I'm joining in Prem in today's afternoon satsang, as always. And it is our privilege and pleasure today to proceed with the beautiful nectarous story of Lord Sri Rama. As always, we begin by offering our most humble salutations and pranams at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, and also our salutations to Lord Hanuman, who is ever present whenever the glory of Rama is sung. Prem, I think the last satsang we discussed and enjoyed the beautiful redemption of the devotee Ahalya, where a touch of the dust of Rama's feet transformed Ahalya, who was inert and who had almost become rock-like, and she got back her life because of the divine touch.
Right. That is the point we had stopped in their journey towards the city of Mithila, you know, where they're going to attend the Yajna there. And that is where this episode happens. And interestingly, you know, in many of the Ramayanas we have read, and we've even seen on the televised version of it, you know, the description which is given is that they're going for the Swayamvara of Sita, which is not true if you look at Swami's version. Swami is clearly saying that they were invited to attend a yajna, and the rest of it just happened incidentally.
In fact, if we see the way Swami has written the Ramkatha Rasavahini, we realize that the Swayamvara comes actually as an afterthought. It is not at all in the plan of King Janaka. As described, the only plan is that we will be having a massive yajna, for which Vishwamitra's presence is very vital, and that is the reason why King Janaka would have also waited for Vishwamitra to finish his penance and his yagnam that he had conducted, which Rama and Lakshmana protected. And at the conclusion of that, he would have invited Vishwamitra to the yagna at Mithila. So finally, Vishwamitra with his retinue, which has been awestruck now, this is the first time they are seeing a miracle unfold before their own eyes. An apparently lifeless, rock-like figurine comes alive, bubbling with life, and out of nowhere comes sage Gautama, And the sage Gautama is like a legend, you know, among all the tapasvis and the ascetics.
Right.
He's a legend. And such a legendary Gautama offers his prostrations and salutations to Rama, this young boy, this young prince, this lad. And this is amazing for the entire retinue to see. You know, as we picturize this scene, we often go back to those times when we got the opportunity to witness firsthand a miracle that Swami performed. You know, it might be as commonplace thing as Swami waving his hand and materializing vibhuti. You know, though I had heard so many times that Swami materialized vibhuti, rings, chains from thin air, the first time I saw it, it was so mesmerizing because this is something I had, I mean, though you might imagine it, it is a different thing to see it and witness it live. And this is not only in my case, Prem, as you would have seen in the later years, in the earlier years when Swami would, you know, walk, he would materialize these rings and chains when he's walking amongst the devotees. The later years, Swami many times has done these materializations by calling the devotee or the students up to the dais and then doing it. And you could see, any time Swami waves his hand, there is a, you know, a complete 40-50 seconds of applause, you know. People are so thrilled and they are clapping. Many of the people who are seated there have come to Swami because of miracles in their lives. They know that nothing is impossible for Swami. There is nothing that he cannot do. And materializing a chain, a ring or vibhuti is, I mean, the most tiniest speck of his glory. And yet there is an excitement and there is a lot of applause because seeing it firsthand is an entire experience in itself. And that is what happened to the retinue sage Vishwamitra's retinue that saw this miracle happen right before their eyes. It is akin to the resurrection, you know, like how people who witnessed Swami resurrecting Subhama or Swami resurrecting Walter Cohen might have felt. It was almost similar to that because nobody expected that, in quotes, thing there to be actually a woman breathing and having life. And in an apparently lifeless thing, Rama injects life with a mere touch of the dust of his feet.
One difference between, you know, Swami materializing, and though it fills us with so much surprise, having followed Swami's life, we kind of tend to expect that from Swami. You know, in a sense, we spoke to one of the devotees who had his marriage performed in Swami's presence in the early 60s. When there was nothing here and you need anything, you need to make a huge list. And I think we did read about a few marriages which Swami performed in those early years.
Including Kasturi
Garu's Professor
daughter.
Kasturi's daughter.
Yes.
When Swami said, you make a comprehensive list and give it to, Grihamabai. And he will go and get it. So that was a time when you had to be absolutely thorough in your preparation. And this person was telling us that yet there was this thought in the back of our mind that if we miss out something, we can just go and ask Swami and Swami will give it to us.
I think I've mentioned this before. Let me mention it again. This, as you say, this was so much prevalent idea in everybody's head. Because I remember, you know, before, I forget, it was the, I think before the 80th birthday, you know, Swami was going to be welcomed into the Hillview Stadium in a Mercedes car, a new Mercedes, I think, what do you call that, roof, which can be opened.
Okay, convertible.
A Mercedes convertible. And on the evening of 22nd, there was the convocation drama, which was held in the Purnachandra Auditorium. After the drama, as the sets were being cleared, I was there because I was part of the drama. So, because of one small error, one of the speakers slipped from the top of the stack and fell directly onto the back part of Swami's Mercedes car.
Okay, the brand new one.
The brand new one, which was supposed to be unveiled for the birthday. And as it crashed, it broke the tail lamp into splinters, you know. It almost powdered the glass. And there was no way you could get a replacement. It's not, first of all, that car was not at that time prevalent in India. It had to be imported from somewhere, even the replacement parts. And the Mercedes showroom or whatever that they contacted in Bangalore said they didn't have. Well, actually what happened finally for that day was, painfully, some of the students sat and they glued back the piece of glass, after which they put a tape on that, and the car was extensively decorated with flowers so that it was covered up, you know. But that night I remember going back to the room, and on the way I met my father and I told him that, you know, today something terrible has happened, but don't, this is only between us. And I told him the whole thing. He said, simple, why don't you just go and tell Swami, you know, he'll wave his hand and give you a Mercedes convertible tail lamp. You know, as you said that the other person said that during the wedding, if anything is missed out, we can just ask Swami. That it is not that that attitude remained only in the 60s or 70s. Even I am speaking as far as 2005 also, this was what my father felt. You can just ask Swami, he'll give you a tail lamp, you can fix it.
Innumerable things, you know, even as you're saying this, I think we can just go on and on with this. Just a thing which strikes me.
You were saying that there's some difference, however, between...
That is the thing, you know, because you expect Swami to do some things like this. In fact, I remember one of my classmates was saying that a senior whom he met, you know, he was from Hyderabad, and one Swami had given him a chain. Okay, and this boy, when he had gone for boating in the Hussain Sagar in Hyderabad with his friends, he apparently lost it and it fell into the lake. Okay, and imagine months later he's coming to Swami. Swami calls him for the interview and notices, okay, in quotes, that his chain is missing. And he says, hey, where's the chain I gave you? And, you know, very hesitantly this boy says, Swami, this is what happened. It fell into the lake. In the next moment, Swami waves his hand and gives him the very same chain. And when I say the very same chain, because there was still that wet mud stuck between the links.
Oh.
Swami said, this is right from, you know, the base of that lake. You dropped it.
Saint Sagar, oh my God.
in the sense, you kind of expect this. But with Rama, you know, whenever he was doing all kinds of amazing things, when he killed Tataki and all that, everybody thought, okay, maybe this is a blessed prince. You know, this is a prince who is very, very valorous and kind of stands above the rest. But nobody expected that somebody would come and, you know, step on some woman
bring,
like this
and
resurrect her and say that this was something which was ordained many, many years ago. Which proves that he is not just another individual who's come by. You know, his coming is an occasion, is an event by itself. It's a phenomenon by itself. You know, that was the thing which was dawned on the people around when Rama did that.
So the surprise element, the element of surprise was much grander,
yes,
much
because
greater.
Because all through, he was trying to play the role of, you know, I am just Dasharatha's son and I am just the prince of Ayodhya.
Possibly because this was the first miracle.
Right.
Yes.
And because, you know, as we have discussed it before, that was one of the reasons why, he kept doing that was the boon which Ravana had. Ravana said, there should be no yaksha or, you know, demon
deva,
or a deva
Gandharva
who should be able to kill me. He said it should be only...
forgot to exclude humans from the boon,
thinking that they are
puny after all, right. What can they do to me? And yes. So, proceeding ahead, the retinue reaches Mithila in the evening after the redemption of Ahalya at Gautama Rishi's hermitage. And it's very interesting because the son of sage Gautama and Ahalya is actually
the preceptor
at Mithila. Just as Vashishta was to King Dasharatha, so was Satananda to King Janaka. But we shall come to that later. As soon as they arrived there, they were looking out for a place where they can, you know, spread some sheet and just take a little rest. You know, one thing that struck me amazing is, Prem, we are discussing the story, but we forget that in the past few weeks, this retinue has traversed hundreds of kilometers. What amazing physical fitness they should have had. Sage Vishwamitra, you know, he is often depicted as white-haired, white-bearded, white-mustached. And we expect him to be a minimum of 70, 80 years, if not elder, if not much more. And a person of that age is comfortably walking across kingdoms, just resting in the night and walking. It's like a marathon, you know. It's like what we do once a year, possibly when we go for a pilgrimage to Himalayas or someplace. Once a year, we prepare for it 1 month in advance so that every day we shall be able to walk 4-5 kilometers or 10 kilometers without getting tired. And here they are naturally walking tens of kilometers on a daily basis without getting tired. Really fantastic physical stamina.
And very true. I mean, it's literally cross-country because they're going from one kingdom to the other. And I think the amount of stories he's told itself shows that.
Yeah, see,
that
Ayodhya is somewhere in central India, almost little above central India. And Mithila, if we see, is almost like Nepal. So it's like a definitely good 400 to 500 kilometers, if not more than that, the distance that they have traveled in the past few weeks. So 500 kilometers, it's not a joke. Right. Really amazing. So they are naturally tired when they reach there. In the meanwhile, King Janaka from Mithila has made so many arrangements. You know, the whole kingdom is abounding with courtiers and soldiers who are actually finding out, gathering info. That time there was no internet, there was no computer.
It
was not their online check-in and login. So these people were finding out who had come. They were maintaining a register, and at the same time, based on the status and position and the age, they would accord them with the proper hospitality and other things. And that is how the courtiers and soldiers come, and they realize that Vishwamitra has come. So with great courtesy and respect and reverence, they lead Vishwamitra and his retinue along with the two princes to a place that has been demarcated for them to be occupied by them on their arrival to Mithila.
And you know, Swami very beautifully describes the scene when this whole group enters the city of Mithila, because they're obviously preparing for that yajna which has attracted these sages from all over the place. So suddenly they see this huge group of ashramites walking in, and in their midst is Rama and Lakshmana, and really standing out. So everybody is wondering, and you know, there's one discourse which Swami gave in the year 96, summer course, where Swami describes that scene. And again, Swami reiterates that point over and over again, how Rama tried to remain as human as possible in appearance. And that is a very interesting episode which Swami says here. I don't think it's there in any other Ramayana. It's just a very small incident. Maybe we should listen to that in Swami's own voice. We got the clip here. We'll just play that out and listen to what Swami says there.
మిథిలాపురములో ఈ రామలక్ష్మణులైనటువంటి వారు ఈ రెండు సింహం పిల్లల వలె సంచరిస్తూ ఉంటే మిథిలాపురం పట్టణ వారందరూ కూడా ఆశ్చర్యపడుతున్నారు.
As Rama and Lakshmana were started moving like lions, inhabitants of Mithila
started looking at them.
Who are these princes?
రేపటి దినం మన సీతా ధనస్సును ఉంచడానికి వచ్చారా?
Have they come to break this?
అని ఆడవారి లోపల చెప్పనక్కర్లేదు. ఇంకా
among women you cannot estimate their joy.
సీతను వివాహమాడే నిమిత్తమై వచ్చారు అని కొంతమంది.
Some thought that they came to marry.
సీతకు తగినటువంటి వాడు ఇతను పిల్లవాడు అని కొంతమంది.
Some thought that the right person.
కథలను పెంచుకుంటూ పోతున్నారు.
They started imagining that way.
కానీ ఈ పిల్లలకి ఇద్దరికి ఏమి తెలియనట్టుగా నటిస్తున్నారు.
But these two were pretending as if they don't know anything.
ఇక్కడ సామాన్య మానవుని యొక్క సంచారం ఏ విధంగా ఉంటుంది?
How should be our movement?
విశ్వామిత్రుడు జనకుడికి చెప్పాడు.
విశ్వామిత్ర టోల్డ్ జనక,
దశరథ మహారాజు కుమారుడు అంటే రామలక్ష్మణుడు కూడాను నా వెంట వచ్చారు అని.
ద సన్ ఆఫ్ దశరథ రామలక్ష్మణ ఆర్ విత్ మీ.
వారికి ఒక విడిదిలిచ్చాడు.
దే గేవ్ దెం సమ్ రెస్ట్.
రాయల్ ఫ్యామిలీకి ఇవ్వాల్సినటువంటి ఒక గౌరవ మర్యాద అంతా కూడాను అక్కడ అందిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
దే వర్ గివెన్ ఆల్ రాయల్ కర్టసీస్ అండ్ హాస్పిటాలిటీ.
నారదుడు కూడాను అక్కడ ప్రవేశించాడు.
నారదు ఆల్సో వాస్ దేర్.
తనలో తాను అనుకుంటున్నాడు,
హి థాట్ విత్ ఇన్ హింసెల్ఫ్,
నారాయణ ఈనాటికి నీ దర్శనం ఈ రూపంగా దర్శించిందాను.
నారాయణ ఐ కుడ్ సీ
ఎంత ధన్యుడను అనుకున్నాడు.
ఐఎమ్ రియలీ గ్రేట్ అండ్ ఫార్చునేట్.
కానీ రాములు అక్కడ ఒక చక్కని నాటకం ఆడుతూ వచ్చాడు.
బట్ రామా స్టార్టెడ్ ఎనాక్టింగ్ ఎ డ్రామా దేర్.
ఆ రూమ్ లోపల పండుకున్నాడు.
హీ స్లెప్ట్ ఇన్ దట్ రూమ్.
ఒక కాలును కాలు పైన వేసుకున్నాడు.
హీ హాడ్ గాట్ వన్ లెగ్ ఓవర్ అనదర్.
నడిచి నడిచి వచ్చి నొప్పి కలిగినట్టుగా ఆ కాలును తాను ఒత్తుకుంటూ ఉన్నాడు.
As if he was very much tired and there's pain in the legs, he started pressing there.
తక్షణమే లోపలికి వెళ్లి ఈ పాదసేవ నేను చేస్తున్నా అని అనుకుంటున్నాడు ఈ నారదుడు.
నారద స్టార్టెడ్ ఫీలింగ్, వై కాంట్ ఐ ప్రెస్ యువర్ ఫీట్.
భగవంతుడు తన పాదసేవ తానే చేసుకుంటున్నాడా?
గాడ్ ఈజ్ జస్ట్ ప్రెసింగ్.
నీ లీల,
వాట్స్ ఆల్ దిస్?
భగవంతుడా, నిన్ను కనుగొనటం ఎవరి తరము?
ఓ గాడ్, హూ కెన్ నో యూ?
నిన్ను కనుగొన్న కలమా.
కెన్ వీ నో యూ?
అణువు కంటే అతి సూక్ష్మరూపుడవు, ఘనము కంటే అతి ఘననీయుడవు.
యు ఆర్ స్మాలర్ దెన్ దట్ ఆఫ్ ఎన్ ఆటమ్ అండ్ బిగ్గెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది బిగ్.
84 లక్ష జీవముల అని ఎమ్మున నెడబాయకుందువట, అణువురేణు తృణకాష్టము వదలు అఖండరు పుడవై వెలయుదుట, నిన్ను గనుగొన్న గల్లమా.
యు ఆర్ ఆల్వేస్ ఇన్ 84 లక్ష స్పీషీస్ ఆఫ్ ది బీయింగ్స్ అరౌండ్.
అతి సూక్ష్మరూపుడవు,
యు ఆర్ సట్లర్ దెన్ ది ఆటమ్.
ఘనము కంటే అతి ఘననీయుడవు.
యు ఆర్ ది బిగ్గెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది బిగ్.
84 లక్ష జీవముల
84 lakhs
అని ఎమ్మున నెడబాయకుందువట,
యు ఆర్ ఆల్వేస్ బి
అణువురేణు తృణకాష్టము మొదలుగా
right from the atom to the
akandaru pudavai velayiduvata ninuganu gonna gallama.
You are the cosmic form, can we know you?
Samanya manavulu vale santaristhunnavu rama.
You are behaving like an ordinary one
ani anukuntu mettaga talupulu terchadu.
He softly opened the door.
Ramudu lechadu.
Rama got up.
Swami నడిచి వచ్చి అలసటగా ఉంటుండదా అని ప్రశ్నించాడు.
He said, are you tired because you have walked long?
నారదా, నాకు అలసట అనేటువంటిది ఒకటి ఉన్నదా?
Am I ever tired?
ఎప్పటికీ లేదు.
Never.
ఈ దేహము మీ నిమిత్తమై వచ్చినదే కాని నా నిమిత్తమై వచ్చినటువంటిది కాదు.
The body is here for you, not for my sake.
కనుకనే మానవ శరీరం చేతనే మానవుని యొక్క బాధను నివారణ గావించాలి.
ఓన్లీ విత్ ది హెల్ప్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ హ్యూమన్ బాడీ ద హ్యూమన్
ఈనాడు మానవుడే సర్వధర్మములు కూడా తప్పినటువంటి వాడు.
అండ్ టుడే ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ హ్యూమన్ దట్ ఇస్ అవే కట్ ఆఫ్ ఫ్రమ్ హిస్ ధర్మ.
పశు పక్షి మృగాదులు కూడా తమ తమ కర్తవ్యమును తాను నిర్వర్తిస్తూ ఉన్నాయి.
ఎనిమల్స్ అండ్ బర్డ్స్ ఫాలో దేర్ ఓన్
తమ సీజన్ తమ రీజన్ కూడా సక్రమంగా అనుసరిస్తున్నాయి.
దే ఫాలో దేర్ ఓన్ ప్రిన్సిపల్.
ఈనాటి మానవునికి నో రీజన్ నో సీజన్.
Only man today has no reason.
మానవత్వం అనేటువంటి ధర్మాన్ని విస్మరిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
He has forgotten his very code of conduct.
కనుకనే మానవులకు బోధించే నిమిత్తమై దైవం మానుష రూపేణ రావలసి వచ్చింది.
To teach the entire humanity, God has taken human form.
కనుకనే ఈ మానవాకారమును ఆధారంగా చేసుకుని మానవుల వల్లే సంచరించడం చేత ఇది సామాన్యమైన మానవులే భ్రమిస్తుంటారు చాలా మంది అజ్ఞానులు.
Many people, ignorant people are deluded because God has taken human form.
So that's that clip, and you know the beauty with Swami narrating anything is so many dimensions to that, and so many nitty gritties in that, and you know that
time is really,
that's what makes even the Ramakatha Swami so special, because you know so many details in which Swami gives us so many options to take diversions.
You know, Prem, you picked up this clip, so I had not heard this before.
Right.
So as I was listening to the clip, I was getting a few thoughts, and you know, I thought, this is what I should speak about, you know, after this. Wow, this is amazing. And now when I see, I have noted down almost 5-6 things, mm-hmm. which are really so amazing in the clip. The first thing is, I felt so thrilled, Prem, because you see, you have the printout right in front of you,
right.
what we have written, and nowhere was the discussion about the physical prowess of sages of yore, because how much they walked. And I felt so beautiful that I felt this was Swami's way of acknowledging it, because I had no idea what's coming in the clip, but in the clip it comes that Rama is pressing his feet right. after a long walk. I felt so thrilled, and I'm grateful to Swami who is here on the sofa listening to the satsang and guiding it. That was one thing. The other thing that struck me was, you know, Rama is pressing his own feet, and when Narada comes to Rama, Rama says to Narada that this body has come only for serving you. At that time it struck me that even at times when it appeared like we were serving the Lord, that was also the Lord actually serving us, you know, by fulfilling possibly the aspirations and desires which people have nourished over a lifetime. Personally, I remember this. I remember sitting in Trai Brindavan and seeing Swami place his feet on the lap of the student sitting right in the front. And you know, Swami was using his the calves of the student as a press board for moving the jhula. And as Swami was doing this, this student has put his hands holding Swami's calves and he's massaging Swami's feet. And you know, Swami, I also remember telling the boy that, you know, you should press harder, you should do. And at the end of it, Swami apologizes, saying that, you know, I made you work very hard. But that boy's expression was like, Swami, come on, you must be kidding. What work hard? This is the greatest bliss. This is the greatest pleasure. This is the most wonderful opportunity that I've got. So you see, even in taking service from others, Swami is actually giving and conferring. So when I had seen this, you know, I had got this desire that, oh God, Swami, how I wish I get this chance. Years passed, you know, though I got opportunities to touch Swami's feet, I never got this opportunity where I can hold Swami's legs directly and, you know, massage them.
Right.
It was during the Delhi trip, the last day of the trip in 2010. The next day we were all supposed to fly back to Puttaparthi. Having dinner that night, Swami suddenly started saying, you know, these legs of mine, I'm constantly confined to this wheelchair. So how much my legs ache. You know, I remembered that when Rama was telling Narada, "Oh Narada, do you think that I will have any kind of pain? You know who I am. Do you think I will have any pain?" That same Swami was now saying that I am having so much pain in my leg. It is only to give an opportunity, because after that he said, how nice it will be, right, if somebody can press my feet. And I had finished my dinner, so I just got up from my chair and I said, Swami, I will. Swami said, you wash your hands first. Because I had not yet washed my hands, so I rushed to wash my hands. And that was the day that I got the opportunity that I had longed for and sought for many years back, and for many years. And then I realized, you know, at the end of it, if somebody told me that actually Swami also took seva from you, Swami took service from you, I would say no way. Swami had no need for it. It's just that I needed it. When I am serving Swami, I am serving Swami because I need it, not because Swami needs it. Because Swami is selflessness from the top of his hair to the tip of his toe. And anything that he does, even when he takes service, it is only to give. No wonder that Swami, you know, in his discourse says that this hand stretches out only to give, give, give. On the face of it, when we have not understood, we may think that this is true for most of the time, but sometimes Swami accepts. Once we go deeper, we realize that even in Swami's acceptance, he has given us so much, because it is in order to give us that great joy that he accepted.
No, this very same thing with Swami saying that this body has come for you. I'm reminded, I think in the year 2002, if I'm not wrong, during that Guru Purnima, I think you also would remember, Swami had developed mumps, you know, one side of his cheek.
I think that's 2001. 2002.
Right. Guru Purnima. 2002 Guru Purnima. And Swami's cheek started swelling and, you know, it was red in color, it was huge, it was hard.
The right side.
In fact, Swami even permitted some of the students to feel it. It was like rock, it had become so hard. And Swami was saying that he was not able to eat. And Swami was also, you know, contemplating on the Guru Purnima discourse which he had to give, because Swami was finding it very difficult even to talk. So this was shared by some of those brothers who were, you know, conversing with Swami, and we had prayed to them to go and tell Swami that we all are praying that Swami should cure himself. So they went and told Swami, this was the very same thing which Swami said. Swami said, this body does not belong to me. This body has come for your sake, so this body is yours. So if you want anything for this body, you have to work for it. You have to pray for it. And that was the message Swami sent to it, and of course we did a lot of bhajans and puja after that, hoping and praying that Swami would listen to our prayers. But this was something which Swami would always remind us, that, you know, this body has come for you and it is your duty to take care of it. And in that sense, Swami allowed that body to wither, and Swami allowed that body to have pain, and even during the Shivratri and all that. At the back of your mind, right in the back of your mind, you have to know that he is beyond pain. But he was doing something so that you could express that sensitivity which is so necessary even for a spiritual person. You know, even if you're looking to go beyond the body, you have to start with goodness, empathy, sympathy and sensitivity. And Swami was giving an opportunity for you to, you know, he was inspiring those qualities in each one of us. And another thing which I remember is once we were talking to some of these hospital boys, you know, these boys from the Whitefield Hospital. During the setting up of the Whitefield Hospital, Swami used to call these boys very regularly and talk to them and all that. And I think that was a time when Swami was beginning to slow down in his walking. Swami was still walking, but he used to take a lot of time to cover that distance during the darshan and all that. So one day Swami was sitting in the throne, and one of these boys started saying that, Swami, you're not taking good care of your body. Why is it that Swami is, you know, struggling to walk? Swami should take more rest and all that. And Swami said, you think Swami is weak? He said, Swami is appearing weak at least, you know, Swami is struggling to walk. Then Swami said, I am much more stronger than any one of you. In fact, I am more strong than all of you put together, Swami said. He said, Swami, all that is fine. We know that Swami is God, but Swami is not walking properly. Swami should take more care of his body. Then Swami threw a challenge. You know, Swami is sitting on his throne, and all these boys, you can imagine, all are well-built, and these are all boys who are in their mid-20s or early 30s. Swami said, okay, you think you're strong? Swami put out both his hands, sitting on the throne. Swami said, lift me if you can. Let's see if you can lift me out of this chair. And no exaggeration, these boys said they immediately rose up. Two boys, one on either side of Swami's arm, they, you know, kind of encircled Swami's arm. They put their arm between Swami's arm and his body, and both sides, like that's the best grip you can get to lift a person. So two boys holding Swami's arm like that, two boys holding Swami's feet like that, okay, and two others holding Swami's hip. They just could not lift Swami out of the chair 1 inch. And Swami said, try. And they tried, and you know, at least for a couple of minutes to 4 minutes, 5 minutes, they tried. They just could not lift Swami 1 inch out of the chair.
I had personally witnessed something like this, Prem. This happened, I think, in 2003 during possibly Ram Navami. I don't know, because Ram Navami, Vishu, all these would come together in the month of April, and Swami would be in Vrindavan. So it could be Ram Navami too. And if it is Ram Navami, it's a beautiful coincidence where we are speaking, a coincidence where we are speaking of Rama. And you know, Swami had this, he used to take help while walking. And in that discourse, Swami mentioned how the magnetic attraction of the earth is holding his feet down, and he has to put tremendous energy to lift each foot up.
Ayashkanta Shaktis. Almost every other discourse, Swami used to mention that.
And then Swami, after that discourse, he just turned towards B.N. Narasimurthy sir, who was the translator, and he said, "You want to try? You want to know how it is? Try moving my foot," he told. And you know, this is the Swami who has had an injury, who has had a accident or whatever, in the sense a hip is broken, so he's weak, so he's standing with support. That Swami, as he's standing, I saw Narasimurthy sir go clench below his calf at his ankle. At Swami's, I'm remembering perfectly well, at Swami's left ankle, he clenched with both his hands and sat and tugged with all his might. You know, I feel any one of our foot also would have moved with such. But Swami didn't budge an inch, and Swami...
I still remember Narasimurthy sir narrating this. And he would say, "I pride myself to be a sportsman. You know, I have been a sportsman all my life, and I kind of have a pride of my own strength. And I tell you, I just couldn't move Swami's feet."
It is just one foot. And the thing is, while you can see the exertion, when you can see sir's face turning red down below with that exertion, I'm looking at Swami's face and he's calm. You know, it was actually towards the end of a bhajan, end of the bhajan that he sings, that this happened. There is not even a little exertion. It's not as if he's trying to plant his foot firmly down on a thing. It's just so immovable. That is what I remembered when you spoke about the interview room episode where they were unable to.
It's a very weird thing to explain, Swami did this, why Swami did
to
that.
To sum it up, I think we can just say that it is not physical strength that moves the Lord. If you want to move the Lord, you have to use your heart.
Right, I think that's the best way to put it.
So, another thing, you know, it struck me when I was listening to this discourse clip that we played was how Swami said that the women of Mithila began to already discuss that, you know, possibly these two have come, one of them is going to get married to our Sita. That was actually not in the air at all. You know, they had not come to wed Sita, they had come, as Swami writes in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, to attend the Yajna. But rumors were afloat, and knowing what happened in the future, it feels like as if these people had predictive abilities. I'm reminded of similar things. Somebody was telling this to me, that when Swami was asked, you know, this summer time would be the time for rumors in Prashantinilayam, as to, first of all, whether Swami is going to Vrindavan or Kodaikanal, or before that, is Swami leaving Puttaparthi? And if he's leaving, where is he going? Vrindavan or Kodaikanal and then Bangalore? And the next thing is when? Date. Which date would Swami be leaving? On one occasion, somebody was narrating this to me, I'm forgetting who it is, but they said that when Swami was asked, "Swami, when are you going to Kodaikanal?" Swami said, "Go ask the taxi drivers outside. They know my plans better." Because I remember when you go out, they will actually have confirmed plans. They will even be telling some of the foreigners that, "Madam, you know what, you book our taxi. 18th, Swami is leaving to Kodaikanal." They seem to have the plan fixed. While those sitting in the portico, those who are walking around Swami, who are with Swami, they have no idea when Swami is going to leave. This is how, you know, rumors would spread. And I was somehow correlating that with this, of them speaking.
Like, you know, you're talking about the taxi drivers. There are times when Swami would come and say, you know, I think one of the old students were telling Swami had come and said that, you know, Swami is going to Vrindavan tomorrow. It seems.
Oh, Swami.
Imagine Swami saying that, it seems Swami is going to Vrindavan tomorrow, that ladies block people are telling. You know, there used to be that permanent elderly ladies used to sit in. Swami would often say, you know, all the rumors start from there. And Swami says, that's what the ladies are
and
saying.
And the variety in the rumors would be such that inevitably one of them will come true. And then that is where that person, that particular origin of the rumor gets credibility and authenticity. Like, hey, you know what this person says means it must be credible. All sorts of things. So anyway, getting back to the story, Rama and Lakshmana, they were housed in a very special palace in the middle of a garden for the night stay at the end of a tiring journey. And they had a very good night's rest. In fact, as we told his name, you know, Satananda. Satananda, who is the son of Ahalya, he welcomes sage Vishwamitra and the retinue. Personally, he has been assigned to do this task. And he says that King Janaka sends word that he will be meeting them in the morning when they are refreshed. He would not like to come and trouble them now. They might be tired. Though he is very eager, he is bursting to listen to so many things from Vishwamitra, but he will allow them to take rest now so that they can be fresh for the morning. And that is how the night passes peacefully. The next morning, Janaka is there early in the morning itself to have darshan of Vishwamitra. That is the word Swami uses in the Ramkatha Rasavahini. He has come to have darshan, because darshan is the sight of a advanced and noble being, and that is what Janaka sees in Vishwamitra. So when he comes for the darshan, Vishwamitra is happy. And Vishwamitra asks the king, what is the plan for the day? What have you planned? Janaka says, you know, it's almost like how what we would say in Swami's presence. Janaka says, nothing, O Lord, nothing, Vishwamitra, nothing, O sage. What greater thing can there be than to just be in your presence? Nothing else is planned. I am just here, all for you today. It is again another beautiful message that, you know, even for the ruler of the land, God and spirituality must be the supreme. Means nothing else should supersede God and spirituality. That is how it was for Janaka. And so Vishwamitra tells Janaka that, you know, I must tell you the story of Rama, and I must tell you the amazing tale of valor of these two princes, Rama and Lakshmana. And Swami writes that as Vishwamitra recounted the heroic deeds of Rama and Lakshmana, Janaka went into a samadhi. He went into bliss. And that, you know, we can correlate with Swami saying happiness is union with God. And union with God does not mean only physical proximity. As long as we are immersed in thoughts of the Lord, we are happy. And that is the union with God we should strive to attain as long as possible, for as much of time possible in our lives. The way Janaka attained samadhi, just listening to the tales of Rama and Lakshmana.
And very beautifully Swami describes that whole event, how it happens. Here is Vishwamitra describing about the exploits of Rama and Lakshmana. And, you know, in a sense that he's getting lost and he's looking at Rama and Sita, Rama and Lakshmana. He's not able to take his eyes off them. And Swami describes, like, in the middle, Janaka tries to speak something else, you know, to distract himself, because it's weird. You're sitting across strangers and you're not able to take your eyes off them.
Staring at them.
You know, glaring at them. And so he tries to start some of the conversation, but still, you know, every now and then he's not able to resist. His eyes turns to Rama and Lakshmana. And I think that is when even this, the sage Satananda comes to realize that his mother has been resurrected by...
has been redeemed by Rama.
Rama.
And he is filled with great joy. He is filled with great joy, and that is the time Vishwamitra also says that, you know, I've got some more good news for you. Your parents will be coming here to attend the yagna. So not only can you rejoice at the fact that your mother has been resurrected by Rama, you can also rejoice that you will be having your parents' darshan tomorrow. And so there is just joy and happiness all around. And when we read through the Ramkatha Rasavahini, that is a message that comes through in every chapter, where Swami is trying to say that wherever there is Rama, wherever there is the name of Rama, there is bound to be joy, because happiness is union with God. I think on this note, it's a perfect time to listen to a bhajan or a song on the beauty and glory of Rama and enjoy that. Thank you.
Sai Rama, Jai Raghurama.
Jai Sai Rama, Jai Raghurama.
Jai Sai Rama, Jai Raghurama.
Jai Sai Rama.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were just listening to the story of Rama, and in the story, Sage Vishwamitra was narrating about the terrific deeds done by the two princes to Janaka, to Emperor Janaka and the other members of his retinue. And as Janaka is listening to this, he is overwhelmed. He knows that Rama and Lakshmana are no ordinary beings. And therefore, though he has provided a magnificent and wonderful palace with all the facilities and you know, as we said, it was situated amidst lush gardens. It's so beautiful. He feels that it is not enough because these are beings who deserve much, much more. They deserve the greatest. And so he comes to Rama and he says, O Prince, I hope, O Rama, I hope that you are satisfied with the arrangements that I have made. Please let me know if there is anything lacking, if there is anything that you need. Please forgive me for that. It shall be immediately provided. Please let me know. And when Janaka is offering himself in all humility completely like this, Rama, you know, it's almost like a display of even greater humility. He says, Oh Emperor, I am a mere boy, you know, I'm just overwhelmed with whatever you have given. I really have no other needs. I did not expect anything like this. It is so wonderful on your part to have done this. I am overwhelmed. I am grateful for all the hospitality. And, you know, Rama makes Janaka feel that you have provided me the greatest things, the most wonderful things, things which I never expected or which I never asked for. So please don't speak like this. It's like a battle of humility that goes on between Emperor Janaka and Rama.
You know, that's a beautiful thing. Again, we are reiterating about Swami's Ramakatha. No? There are lessons in every part of the narrative where Swami is saying that this is how you have to invite a guest. You know, the part where Swami says that they were accommodated according to their status in society. That's a very important thing. Swami would often say when you're planning for a program, when you're planning for an event, where you're inviting a lot of people, how they should be seated. There is a, you know, science behind that. How you seat the people according to their, you know.
Speaking of status, if you don't mind, I'm going to butt in with one little episode with which Professor G.V. narrated. Just recently I heard him say that. He was saying that once when he had gone to Vrindavan for darshan, Swami wanted to send a letter to the hospital or to somebody, I think mostly the hospital.
Okay.
Some letter, some regarding some clarifications. So Swami asked Professor G.V., when are you going to Parthi? He said, Swami, I'm leaving today morning by the car. Swami said, yes, you know, I have got this letter that needs to be delivered. So he said, Swami, it will be my honor to carry that letter. I'll take it. So Swami gave him the letter. But he says, within a few minutes, he said, no, you give it back. You know, today evening, these hospital boys are coming from Puttaparthi. They will be going and I will send the letter along with them. So Professor G.V. told Swami, Swami, it is no problem. It is no big deal. Really, I will, it will be a great, wonderful thing. I will carry the letter for you, Swami. It doesn't, put me into any inconvenience at all. It's a pleasure, it's a privilege in fact. Then Swami says, no, see, you are not a postman. You are the vice chancellor. It was by mistake that I told like this, you know. See Swami's humility, and he says, no. So that maryada for the position, that respect for the position, Swami said, so you are not a postman. You don't do this. Vice chancellor, you are the vice chancellor. I will give it to somebody else. And finally, G.V. sir did not carry the letter, you know. And after that he narrated 2-3 more incidents where Swami has given so much respect for that position because in the worldly sense that position demands it. At a personal level, you might be a devotee, I might be the Lord. But in the professional level or in the organizational level, this is the position and this is the maryada that has to be given to the position and I will give it.
You know, this is, I think, of course, many, many times Swami has mentioned this. I mean, we've also spoken about that incident when Swami wanted to take two research scholars and put them in the hospital. You know, Swami wanted to send them to the US for a special training. Even on that occasion, they were already enrolled. I think they'd already joined the hostel. They're not enrolled officially as research scholars. And Swami had decided to take them and put them in this course in the US. So even that time, Swami had informed these boys and told them that ask your parents if they're ready. So after having got their parents' permission, then Swami turned to the Vice Chancellor and Swami asked the Vice Chancellor, can I take these two boys? You know, Vice Chancellor or S.P. Giri sir was there and he said, Swami, what are you asking me? They are your boys. Swami said, yeah, they are my boys, but they are under you. You are the Vice Chancellor and they are research scholars. I cannot take them out without asking your permission. So you tell me, as a Vice Chancellor, do you permit me to take these boys for this job in the hospital? Now, every time Swami reiterates that protocol, internally Swami would say that you should have bhava dvaita. Internally you have the feeling that everybody is one. But when you functionally move about in society, it's important to give people that importance which they deserve, which they have rightfully earned through their, you know, actions in daily life.
Wonderful.
And the other thing which, you know, comes here is when Janaka goes and asks Rama that, is there anything more I can do for you? Is there anything else? In fact, he says, would you like to do a little bit of sightseeing? Can I teach you around? You know, that's what...
any host would do.
Right. I'm reminded of another, one elderly devotee who was saying that when they used to travel with Swami, you know, Swami would be very keenly noticing what are the things these people are asking for, especially in the dining table or something. And I'm really not clear of what that episode was. But he was saying that once one of the people in Swami's group had asked the host for something which was not there in the menu or something like that. You know, maybe he was serving tea and they asked for coffee or something like that. And later Swami called that person aside and, you know, very, very sternly told him that this is not how a guest should behave. You know, the guest should be very, very careful of what he asks. Because if he asks for something that the host cannot provide or is not, you know, readily available, he might be putting that host into untold inconvenience, which is very, very wrong.
Embarrassment.
Embarrassment, if he's not able to do it. So Swami said you should always be within that, you know, a self-made enclosure where you're giving the pleasure of hosting you to that host and not ask for unnecessary things. In fact, I remember, I think in one of the Kodai trips when Swami went, there would be a couple of other devotees' houses which Swami would visit as part of that Kodai trip. You know, I think one is the house of Mr. Srinivasan, the All India President, and I think there was another devotee whom Swami used to visit. So Swami had fixed one particular day to visit that devotee's house, and Swami called that devotee and said, tomorrow boys are coming for lunch, curd rice, sambar rice, one sweet. Swami told him. He said, nothing more. Curd rice, sambar rice, one sweet. If you make anything more, Swami will be very upset. He said, yes, Swami. Swami, just come, we will take care. And Swami repeated it at least three times. Swami said, curd rice, sambar rice, sweet. Okay. So when they landed up the next day, that curd rice, sambar rice, sweet was one of 13 other items. It was a huge spread. And Swami said, what is this? Why have you put like this? He said, obviously, Swami, you are coming. How can I give only that much? You know, in a sense, Swami was so pleased with that disobedience, you could put it that way. But you know, that was a lesson of Swami's teaching, that when you're going to somebody's house, when you're being a guest for somebody, you should show humility and you should give that opportunity for that host to do more than what you're asking for.
Beautiful, beautiful point indeed. Because you know, most of the time we hear of incidents and experiences where Swami is a perfect host. But Swami is also the perfect guest.
Right.
You know, when we had accompanied him to Harshi, this is what happened, you know, exactly. And it came in matters of food itself. Swami had even told that, you know, you will be served chapatis. You know, this is not South India. Don't expect your rice and rasam. He had told so sweetly all these things. And there, they actually brought rice and rasam and served to Swami. And there is this video of the Vijaya Bhojanam, a part of which occurs even in the Sai Blossom product called A Shrine is Born. In that, this dinner session is videotaped and it is there. And there Swami is saying, you know, I have been to so many places, but this kind of treatment I have never received. I thought there will be some chapati. You made rasam rice. How did you? You know, Swami seemed so amazed that somebody who is not from South India had learnt and had made rasam rice. While, you know, later on this time when I had been to Delhi before the Himalayan trip, I was speaking to the state president there, Mr. Chima, and Chima's wife. And she got the chance of cooking for Swami when Swami was
in Delhi.
So she was saying that, you know, months before Swami came itself, as a host, you know, it's like inspirational for both the host and the guest. As a host, you have to be 100% ready. And as a guest also, you have to be 100% sacrificing. That's what Swami teaches. So she had actually picked up. You know, she learned what all are the things that Swami has on a daily basis from Kanji. And she actually narrated saying that her two little kids were her guinea pigs. She would feel that, you know, an adult may, out of courtesy, say that it is good. But how do you test out Kanji, Rasam and everything? A kid is very spontaneous in his or her reaction. And so if the kid says, no, then you know it's not come out well. If the kid likes it, you know Swami is going to like it. So she said that for almost a month, she made guinea pigs out of her own children and she tried out everything. So usually this is the kind of preparation that goes on. And I think even at a physical level, Swami knows that they prepare. And yet, Swami gives them joy by saying, you know, this is something I never expected. You provided me with rasam. How awesome you are. Swami didn't use the word, how awesome you are. But they felt so awesome that they could delight Swami. And as you perfectly put it, Swami is such a perfect guest, just like Rama is, that he gives you delight with whatever efforts that you have put in. That was a beautiful episode.
Right. And the beauty with Swami is, you know, he effortlessly would go from that role of a guest to being a member of that family. You know, that is also, we've seen so many times. Mm. I think once when Swami had taken all of us, our entire class, to a devotee's house, it was so beautiful for us to see Swami moving around that house into every room, into every bedroom, and with such familiarity. Mm. You know, Swami would go around and Swami said, hey, where is this cupboard? There was a cupboard here. Mm. You know, and they said, no, Swami, we rearranged it. There's a computer table now. And, you know, it was so beautiful because Swami was with us as guest, and Swami was, you know, he was carrying himself so beautifully and as a perfect example for all of us. You know, Swami was telling us how you have to behave. But at the same time, Swami was part of that family. And I remember there was a couple over there, an elderly couple, and Swami looked at them and Swami started talking to them, and suddenly Swami turned to us and he said, they were quite an elderly couple, you know, the husband would have been in his mid-50s maybe. Swami said, you know, this boy and girl, Swami said, Swami performed the marriage.
Oh,
Swami said, Swami had performed the marriage. And then Swami turned to them and said, 60th marriage bhi Swami karega. Okay, the Shashti Purti also Swami will do. And instantly the couple just broke down. He said, Swami, so much love. You know, how do we respond to this love? Swami said, what is there in this? It is your right, it is my responsibility. You know, who other than the head of the family would say something like this? Mm. You know, it was so beautiful to see Swami effortlessly moving from being a guest, a perfect and well-behaved guest, if you could put it that way, to somebody who was part of that family.
It reminds me of that board, like a notice that we often put in our homes. It says, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba is the head of this family, a silent witness
to every conversation,
an unseen guest at every meal.
Right.
Wow, it is so wonderful. And if we can actually live with this feeling, it will be so uplifting and so beautiful, because we will be able to feel Swami every moment in our lives. So going back to the story, when Rama says that there's nothing that could have been possibly done more, because more than necessary has been done, that is when Vishwamitra intervenes and he tells
Janaka. Very beautifully, Swami says there that when he asks, do you want to do some sightseeing or something else? It seems, we are very comfortable, but there is one thing, and it seems Rama stops there and looks at Vishwamitra. But there is one thing, of course, you can do for us, and looks at Vishwamitra.
And Vishwamitra then says that, you know, being warriors, they are valiant princes. Naturally, weaponry is something that amazes them and thrills them. And he tells Janaka that, in fact, it is with the lure of the bow of Lord Shiva, the Shiva Dhanush that is here, that I have brought them to Mithila. It will be wonderful if you can arrange for the two princes to have a look at the bow. And now that the topic has been mentioned, Rama immediately asks King Janaka, O King, could you please tell us the story of this bow? How did you happen to get it? And that is when Janaka narrates how, beginning from his ancestor Nimi, later on, I think it is Devaratha.
Devaratha, who eventually...
The sixth generation after Nimi. He is the one who has been gifted this bow as a result of his penances. And this is a bow that is so powerful, so strong, that nobody on the face of the earth is able to lift it, let alone string it. So that is how the bow comes to the family and it is being worshipped there. At this point in time, Janaka also narrates the story of Sita's birth.
Right.
And Sita actually means a furrow. And Sita has been so named because it is while tilling the land or making a furrow in the land that a box is discovered in which Sita is found, a little baby Sita. And since Janaka finds this baby girl, he decides to adopt her. And she has been named as Sita. And as Sita grows up playing amongst the other children in the palace,
playmates
with her playmates, one of the favorite games is to play with the ball. And one day as they're all playing with the ball rolls under the big box in which this Shiva Dhanush has been placed. So, because the story is linked with Shiva Dhanush, Janaka is narrating it to Rama, and here you can see the way the master plan works. Though there is nothing, no plans about Rama's wedding with Sita, all this is brought in via divine master plan. Rama has just apparently asked a harmless question about, you know, how this bow happened to come, and Janaka cannot resist narrating this because he has witnessed something amazing and miraculous. It can be compared akin, it can be compared to what the inmates of the ashram witnessed when Ahalya came to life. It was something like that, because as Sita is playing with the playmate, the ball rolls under this box, and the box is huge. In fact, Swami describes it as a box with 8 wheels which had to be tugged by hundreds of men to move it, right, because that was the weight of the bow. When they are struggling to get this ball out, the little Sita, this girl, just walks, pushes the box and pushes it to an extent so that the ball is exposed, picks the ball and goes off. And this Janaka sees and he is just astounded. He is unable to imagine the strength and power of Sita. You know, and that is when he decides that marriage is between equals. And so somebody who is having the power and strength to move and lift this bow alone should get married to my Sita. That is the decision that Janaka has taken. Now, 2-3 very important points here. One thing is, we know later in the Ramayana that Ravana kidnapped Sita. Now imagine, later on, because Sita grows into such a beautiful maiden, everybody is attracted towards her and everybody wants to have her as a wife. So every kingdom, every prince, every yaksha, every kinnara, every gandharva, every rakshasa tries to come and lift the bow, and among them is also Ravana. Ravana, who is supposed to be so mighty that he has lifted the Kailas itself. Even Ravana is unable to move the bow.
Right.
Now just imagine, Ravana is unable to move the bow, which Sita as a baby, as a child, as a little girl, just moved the box. So definitely Sita is so much more powerful than Ravana. And yet the same Sita is kidnapped and apparently a helpless prisoner in Ravana's Lanka. That's what unfolds later on. I personally felt that this has a very deep meaning, because oftentimes Swami has spoken about Sita as Prakriti, Sita as nature, mother nature. You know, mother nature is very sweet by nature. Mother nature is very benign, very giving, very generous. But don't allow that to fool you. Mother nature is very, very, very powerful. In fact, her power and her strength is just next to God. That is something we should not forget, seeing how sweet, charming and benign she is. That is the mistake Ravana made, and ultimately that resulted in his doom. And in modern times, that is a mistake that we should not make. Abuse nature, thinking that after all she is benign and ever giving. Because if nature decides to unleash her power and fury, nobody will be able to face it.
You know, in a sense, of course, the beauty of the thing is, you know, Sita is strong enough to move that bow, and Ravana himself, in fact, we'll play out one clip where Swami speaks about how Ravana comes and gets humiliated in trying to lift that bow. You know, in a sense, going into the deeper meaning or the inner meaning or the subtle meaning of this whole episode, Swami would say that the Dhanush actually stood for ego. You know, anybody who is able to lift it is a person who has conquered his ego. That is the essence of that episode of lifting the, you know, okay, the Shiva Dhanush. And Swami would say that Sita represented that self-knowledge. She was a person who actually stood for self-knowledge. So Swami would say for self-knowledge to play around with ego is very simple. That's why, like, she went and picked up the ball, she pushed the bow and the box in which the bow was contained. But if you see, Swami says that Ravana stood for desire. And Swami would say desire has the power to steal away self-knowledge from you. And that is what Swami would say, that, you know, Ravana came and abducted Sita. The idea of Rama abducting Sita is, when you have a desire, the desire has the ability to remove self-knowledge from you, from your mind. And that is the whole journey where, you know, you go after self-knowledge by, you kill the desire and you try to take back the self-knowledge. But, you know, that is the beauty of Ramayana. When we're going through it, there are layers and layers of meaning. You know, we can talk about how a guest should behave or how a host should behave. You know, talking of the same episode, and we can go into something which is so much more subtle, which might need years and years of, you know, contemplation to even understand it.
Rightly put, very rightly said. And so, dear listeners, in no way can Prem and me state that we are doing a comprehensive coverage of the Ramayana, because the Ramayana has got such a breadth of meaning, such a depth of meaning, and based on our understanding and our experience is what we say. Whatever insights occur to you, you can definitely share them with all of us, so that if not directly, we will use those thoughts and beautiful insights that you have sent to share with everyone around in our next fortnight when we do the Ramkatha Rasavahini Satsang. So you can definitely write to us at listener@radiosai.org with your insights and with your understanding and what you feel, what Swami has inspired in you about these anecdotes and stories of Lord Rama.
You know, coming back to the story where we were at the point where Janaka was explaining this, how Sita came to him and how he decided that he would give Sita in marriage only to somebody who is able to lift and string this bow. And Janaka then explains how he threw this challenge open to any king, and many of the kings came and tried, and they all thought that this was a ploy to humiliate them. Because Janaka, knowing well that this is not possible for anybody, he's just calling kings to humiliate them. And then Janaka explains that how all of them teamed up together and tried to lay siege on Mithila.
You know, when you say that only one without ego will be able to lift the bow, the reaction of the various kings to this itself shows how egoistic all were.
Right.
And therefore, it's natural they couldn't lift the bow, and it's natural that they feel like taking revenge and they lay siege on Mithila.
Right. And then Janaka explains that how they had repeated wars against Janaka, and in the process Janaka loses all his resources. In the arms front.
They're depleted.
And then Janaka says that he goes and meditates and does austerities. And in just one sentence, Swami explains a very beautiful incident which happens in a very simple manner. Because Janaka says that, you know, these people were attacking, the armies were attacking, and finally the gods were pleased and decided to come to the help of Janaka. And he said the gods sent him army which attacked these armies from the behind. You know, it's not an army which appeared in the Mithila city and went and fought. He said these armies came behind those armies which were attacking,
which had besieged Mithila.
Right, and scattered them. And that's how the city was saved. And he could still, you know, preserve this bow, which was so precious.
And the bow is being worshipped on a daily basis. And because it is symbolic of so many things,
right,
as we said. When Vishwamitra expresses like this, that it would be a great thing for Rama and Lakshmana if they can look at the bow, Dasharatha says, definitely we shall take the bow out of its place in the altar. And I imagine that the altar for the bow must be an entire building in itself, because the bow was so huge and it was in a box with eight wheels. And anyway that the bow is now being removed, Janaka says that, you know, I shall again throw open the same condition, saying that now that the bow will be on display, it's going to be worshipped publicly. Anybody who will be able to handle this bow will be welcome to wed Sita. And this is for the first time that the wedding of Sita comes into picture. Till now it was only a yagna. And when the bow is making its way to the yagnashala, that is when King Janaka announces that it will also be like a competition, or it will be a time when we will decide who is the perfect suitor for Sita.
Right.
And so the next day, as promised, Janaka gets the bow, and the bow is brought into the Yagnashala.
Right. And, you know, Arvind, we can go on telling the story, but when I just heard that part where Swami describes how Rama goes up and breaks that bow, I mean, I just couldn't believe that we could do a better description of that scene than Swami.
Okay.
So I just got that clip. Maybe we should play it out and listen in Swami's voice how Swami beautifully describes, you know, the grandeur and the dignity with which Rama walks up to that bow and he defeats it in the midst of all those other kings who had tried and who had failed.
Sure.
Chuchadu Vishwamitrudu.
Vishwamitra saw.
Rama.
Rama.
Deenni virchagalava.
Can you break this?
నవ్వినాడు పాపం.
రామ స్మైల్.
ఇంత చిన్నదానిని ఈ చిన్న పనికి నాకు అప్పచెప్తున్నాడే.
ఈజ్ గివింగ్ ది స్మాల్ డ్యూటీ టు మీ.
ఈ చివరి చిన్న ధనుస్సు
స్మాల్ థాన్
ఎడమ చేతితో తుంచవచ్చును.
ఐ కెన్ బ్రేక్ టు ది లెఫ్ట్ హ్యాండ్.
ఇది నీవు తుంచగలవా అని చెప్పి నన్ను ప్రశ్నిస్తున్నాడు విశ్వామిత్రుడు.
విశ్వామిత్రుడు ఇస్ క్వశ్చన్.
ఇదే మాయ అనుకున్నాడు.
ఐఎమ్ జస్ట్ ఫాలోయింగ్.
సరే ఏమి కదలలేదు.
హి డిడ్ంట్ మూవ్.
అందరూ బలశాలులు అందరూ వచ్చారు.
ఆల్ స్ట్రాంగ్ పీపుల్ కేమ్.
ఆ సభ లోపల రావణాసురుడు కూడా వచ్చాడు.
రావణాసురు ఆల్సో వాస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ దట్ కోర్ట్.
ఇతను వచ్చాడు, తన బల పరాక్రమంతా కూడాను అక్కడ ప్రదర్శిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
హి స్టార్టెడ్ ఎగ్జిబిటింగ్ ఆల్ హిస్ మజిల్ పవర్.
కట్ట కడపటికి దాని కింద పడిపోయి కదలలేకుండా పోయాడు.
అల్టిమేట్లీ హీ ఫెల్ డౌన్.
ఈ అవమానాన్ని భరించుకోలేకపోయాడు రావణుడు.
రావణ కుడ్ నాట్ బేర్ ద షేమ్.
అహంకార అభిమాన అసూయలు ఉండినటువంటి వారికి ఎక్కడ పోయినా కానీ అవమానం అనేటువంటిది తప్పినది కాదు.
ద వన్ విత్ ఈగో అండ్ జెలసీ అండ్ హేట్రెడ్ ఇస్ బౌండ్ టు ఫేస్
అహంకారం ఉన్నటువంటి రావణుకి ఇక్కడ కూడా పరాభవం తప్పలేదు.
అండ్ రావణ ఆల్సో ఇస్ పుట్ టు షేమ్ హియర్.
ఈ అసూయ కలిగినటువంటి రావణుకి ఎక్కడ పోయినా ఈ యొక్క పరిబాధ తప్పలేదు.
రావణ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ జెలసీ హస్ బీన్ పుట్ టు
షేమ్. అందరూ పక్కులు నవ్వారు.
ఎవ్రీబడీ లాఫ్డ్.
కానీ అతనికి అవమానం, ఎంత అవమానం. పది తలలు కూడా ఒక్కతూరు తీసినట్టుగా అయిపోయింది.
హి ఫెల్ట్ యాజ్ ఇఫ్ హి లాస్ట్ ఆల్ ద 10 హెడ్స్ బికాజ్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమిలియేషన్.
ఈ సమయం లోపల
ఎట్ దట్ టైం
14 సంవత్సరముల యొక్క వయసు కలిగినటువంటి ఈ రాముడు నెమ్మదిగా నడుచుకుంటూ వచ్చాడు.
రామ స్టార్టెడ్ మూవింగ్ మెజెస్టికల్లీ ఇన్ సాఫ్ట్నెస్
స్లోలీ. ఇతను వస్తుంటే సభలో ఉండినటువంటి ప్రజలందరూ కూడాను ఈ పిల్లవాడేమిటి, ఈ ధనుస్సును విచ్చడం ఏమిటి అని హాస్యాస్పదంగా మాట్లాడుతూ వచ్చారు.
ఆల్ దోస్ దట్ అసెంబుల్ దేర్ ఇన్ ద కోర్ట్ దే స్టార్టెడ్ మేకింగ్ ఫన్ ఆఫ్ వాట్ ఇస్ దిస్ యంగ్ బాయ్, హౌ కెన్ యూ బ్రేక్ దిస్.
ఇది ఆశ్చర్యం.
ఇట్స్ మ్యాటర్ సర్ ప్రాంగ్.
ఇది కేవలము ఒక అవమానకరమైనటువంటి రీతిగా సంచరిస్తున్నాడు ఈ పిల్లవాడెవరు.
దిస్ బాయ్ ఇస్ మూవింగ్ అబౌట్.
ఇతనికి పర్మిషన్ ఇచ్చినటువంటి వారెవరు?
హూ బ్రాట్ హిమ్?
ఈ విధంగా ఎవరికి తగినట్టు వారు మాట్లాడుతూ ఉన్నారు.
ఈచ్ వన్ స్టార్టింగ్ ఇన్ హిస్ ఓన్ వే.
రాముడు వచ్చాడు.
రామ కేమ్.
నిలిచాడు.
హి స్టూడ్ దేర్.
అంతా సభనంతా ఒక్కతూరి పరికసించాడు.
హి జస్ట్ వాచ్డ్ ఆల్ అరౌండ్.
ఎడమ చేతితో దాన్ని ఎత్తాడు.
హి లిఫ్టెడ్ విత్ ది లెఫ్ట్ హ్యాండ్.
ఓ, ఇంకా ఈ ఎడమ చేతితో రాములు ఎత్తేటప్పటికి
బై ది టైమ్ రామ లిఫ్టెడ్ ది
లెఫ్ట్ హ్యాండ్ ప్రజలంతా కూడా ప్రతిధ్వనులతో మిన్నుమిట్టున్నాయి.
హి ఇస్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ చీర్స్ అండ్ అప్లాజ్ రిసౌండింగ్.
దానిని తిరిగి నారి కట్టాలి.
అండ్ ఇస్ ద థ్రెడ్ హ్యాస్ టు బి టైడ్.
దాన్ని వంచి నారి కట్టాలి.
అండ్ ఇట్ హ్యాస్ టు బి బెండ్.
ఎడమ చేతితోనే వంచినాడు.
అండ్ ఇట్ బెండ్.
వంచేటప్పటికి విరిగిపోయింది ఈ యొక్క శివధనస్సు.
యాజ్ హి స్టార్టెడ్ బెండింగ్ దట్ బౌ ఇట్ బ్రోక్.
ఆ శబ్దము మహాప్రళయంగా రూపొందింది.
దట్ ఈస్ ది సౌండ్ ఆఫ్ ఎ థండర్.
ఏ ఆటం బాంబు, ఏ హైడ్రోజన్ బాంబు వేస్తే శబ్దం ఎత్తొస్తుందో ఆ విధంగా వచ్చేసింది ఈ శబ్దం.
ఇట్ వాజ్ ది సౌండ్ ఆఫ్ ఎన్ ఆటం బాంబు ఆర్ హైడ్రోజన్ బాంబు.
ఈ దృశ్యాన్ని చూచారందరూ కూడాను.
ఎవ్రీబడి వాచ్ ద సీన్.
ఆ యొక్క అయోధ్య పురివాసులంతా కూడా లేరక్కడ. ఇంత కూడాను ప్రతి ఒక్కరు కూడాను స్త్రీలందరూ కూడాను ఆశ్చర్యపడిపోతున్నారు.
ఆల్ విమెన్ ఎవ్రీబడి అరౌండ్ దేర్ సర్ప్రైజ్.
మిథిలాపుర స్త్రీలందరూ కూడాను మా సీతమ్మకు తగినటువంటి వారు చిక్కాడురా అనుకున్నారు.
ఆల్ లేడీస్ దేర్ ఇన్ మిథిలాపుర థాట్ దట్ ఏ రైట్ మ్యాన్.
చేరిన స్త్రీలందరూ కూడాను రాముడిని వర్ణించేటువంటి వారే.
అండ్ దేర్ విమెన్ స్టార్టెడ్ డిస్క్రైబింగ్ రామ.
అట్టి వర్ణిస్తూ ఉండిన సమయం లోపల
యాజ్ దే వర్ డిస్క్రైబింగ్ హిమ్
ఇంకా వివాహమునకు సిద్ధం చేశారు.
ఆల్ ప్రిపరేషన్ ఫర్ ద వెడ్డింగ్ వాజ్ మేడ్.
విశ్వామిత్రుడు వచ్చి రాముని అడిగాడు.
విశ్వామిత్ర కేమ్ అండ్ ఆస్క్డ్ రామ్.
నీవు తయారుగా ఉన్నావా?
ఆర్ యు రెడీ నౌ?
ఏమిటి ఇది స్వామి?
వాట్ ఇస్ దిస్ స్వామి?
పితృఆజ్ఞ పేరు పరిపాలించేటువంటిది నా సహజ ధర్మము.
ఇట్స్ మై నేచురల్ క్వాలిటీ టు ఒబే ద కమాండ్ ఆఫ్ మై ఫాదర్.
తండ్రి ఆజ్ఞ లేకుండా నేను ఆ సీతను కూడా చూడను.
వితౌట్ ఫాదర్స్ పర్మిషన్ ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఎట్ ది ఫేస్ ఆఫ్ సీత.
కనుక తల్లిదండ్రులకు దీన్ని వార్తను పంపించండి.
Send a message to my parents.
వా ఇష్టం పైన నా ఇష్టం ఆధారపడి ఉంటుందన్నా.
Basing on their permission, I would follow.
పోని నిష్కార్థమైనా చేసుకోవచ్చును, మాలైనా వేయించుకోండి అన్నారు.
I said at least engagement can be done, at least garland.
నేను ఎప్పుడు ఎంగేజ్ లోనే ఉంటున్నాను.
I said I'm always engaged.
నాకు ఈ ఎంగేజ్మెంట్ అక్కర్లేదు.
I don't want this.
సీతను కూడా నేను చూడనక్కర్లేదు.
I don't want to see Sita.
ఎందుకనగా?
Reason.
వివాహం కాక పూర్వము పర స్త్రీని చూడటం మహాపాపం అనేటువంటి సత్యం నాకు తెలుసున్నాడు.
ఐ నో ద ట్రూత్, బేసిక్ ట్రూత్ దాట్ టు లుక్ ఎట్ ఎ ఉమన్స్ ఫేస్ బిఫోర్ మ్యారేజ్ ఇస్ ది వర్స్ట్ సిన్.
కనుక అంతవరకు నేను చూడను.
టిల్ దెన్ ఐ డోంట్ సీ.
నేరుగా ఇంటికి వెళ్ళాడు తన గదికి.
హి వెంట్ హోమ్ స్ట్రైట్ టు హిస్.
జనక మహారాజు చేయవలసిన ప్రయత్నాలంతా చేస్తున్నారు.
జనక వాస్ మేకింగ్ ఆల్ ప్రిపరేషన్స్.
యు ప్రేమ్, హియరింగ్ దిస్ డిస్కోర్స్ క్లిప్ ఐ ఇట్ వాస్ సో అగైన్ వన్స్ అగైన్ so many thoughts come because this Swami has this uncanny ability, you know. He'll be speaking something in middle, simply he'll insert one super powerful profound statement and just go on casually as if like it was nothing, and in just one clipping you get four five things and you don't know where to go. Because I've not heard these clips before as such. Hearing over here and seeing the preparation paper, it's so different. But one thing, you know, that struck me is something very, very practical. This is something that even I have personal interest in, because it is a question that has been asked to me 2-3 times during some talks that have been delivered.
Okay.
You know, people ask, is Swami against love marriage? Does it have to be always arranged marriage? And then, you know, they quote some arranged marriages which have gone wrong, which have ended up in divorces. At the same time, it's not as if love marriage has no negatives. There have been many disappointing results in that also. So what does Swami say about love marriage, arranged marriage? Personally, I have not heard anything Swami directly say about this. But, you know, hearing Swami speak about Rama, it is very clear what Swami expects. You know, in the ultimate sense, don't, till you're married, you don't even cast such eyes towards any other woman. And I think that holds good for a woman, not to cast eyes on any other man in such manner till you're married. Which almost seems like arranged marriage is the only way out. I remember a talk that Professor Anil Kumar sir gave, based on a Kodai trip, during which Swami spoke extensively about the Ramayana. So in that talk he was mentioning about this aspect, this facet. He did not again explicitly state, Anil Kumar sir did not again explicitly state about arranged marriage or love marriage as such. He just said this much, that Swami expects that any marriage that happens, happens with the blessings and consent of the parents. And hearing that, and you know, I even read about him saying this, about Professor Anil Kumar sir saying that Swami said this in one of the sessions in Kodaikanal, I felt that that is, could be a guiding, good guiding thumb rule. When we, you know, some of us are very strongly against arranged marriages, some of us are strongly against love marriages. So instead of getting rigid on this, I think the spirit is that any marriage that happens, happens with the blessings of both the parents. By both I mean the bride's parents and the groom's parents. Because it is very evident that a marriage is not just between two individuals, but it is between two families, it is between two lineages, as we shall see. That is what happens during Rama's wedding. The entire lineage is called upon. It is not just two individuals. So, Anil Kumar sir was saying in his talk that Swami definitely expects that the parents of the bride and the parents of the groom are happy just as the bride and groom are happy, and then alone should the marriage be allowed to proceed. So, that I think is a very nice thumb rule, if we can call it so, a guiding principle, if we can call it so, whether it's an arranged marriage or love marriage. You know, in my opinion, I feel in a love marriage, the attraction comes first, the marriage comes later. In arranged marriage, the marriage comes first, the attraction comes later. So, overall, there is love in both the kinds of marriages. But that is my personal opinion. But as far as Swami's directive is concerned, I think it is very clear, whether whatever be the type, the parents' consent, the parents being happy with it, is of great importance, and that is something that we have to adhere to.
Very true, and the way you said it, it's very important, you know, to see marriage as a union of two families, because many times that is what is missed out. You know, the reason why the arranged marriage tradition still holds good in India is because, in a sense, most of us still see it like that. You know, you are inviting a person into the family, you are sending a person into another family. So it is very important for the two families to know each other and, you know, to have that idea that, yes, we are comfortable with each other. It's not that it is my life and I know what I'm going to do with it and I am responsible for what happens. It is not that way at all. It is each one saying that, you know, I cannot look at my future without acknowledging my past. I cannot go into my future if I cannot give respect to the people who have brought me so far. That's a very important point which Swami was making, definitely.
And now that this topic has come up, Prem, I'm just tempted to make a few more observations. You know, one more thing that India is often criticized for is saying this caste-based marriages, marriages based on, it's only between Kshatriya and Kshatriya, Brahmin and Brahmin. See, again, it is seen in a wrong light. The reason this was done is, you know, for example, if I look at my own marriage. So, Pooja's parents, that is my wife's parents, mother, is from a part in Karnataka. My parents are also from Karnataka. It's just that while they are from the coastal Karnataka region, we are from the Bangalore region, the capital city.
Right.
So the kind of Kannada differs. The kind of foods cooked also differ. You know, it takes time, some time for my wife to develop a taste to the kind of dishes that is cooked at our home. And it takes me some time to develop a taste for the kinds of dishes that are cooked at their home. I'm taking a very simple example. Now imagine two people from the same state, same linguistic background, still having such differences. Now imagine how much the differences will be if they are so far off. You might have troubles absolutely not being able to taste or enjoy the other's food. So, this is only in terms of food. In all other things, you know, there are some kind of similarities which actually bind us. And in order to make it easier for the two families to bind together, they would suggest that look out for similar traditional families. It's just like similar-minded people, you know, two people who are passionate about social uplift. It's good that they get married. Rather than one who is all about social uplift, one who is towards pursuing a career, I'm just giving a random example, it will be a clash. So, just like like-minded individuals decide to get married,
like cultural backgrounds
should be the families into which, and that was the reason why they said that, you know, this family, we pick up a girl or a boy from this kind of family alone. It is not some kind of a rigid caste system. It is just to ensure that this mixing becomes more homogeneous and more comfortable, rather than why to try mix two things which don't seem to mix, gel together. It would be easier if it can be done along similar backgrounds.
Right. And, you know, that is a characteristic of Rama Swami's bringing out in this thing, where he says, you know, he's not even interested to look at the girl. I mean, he's won the princess, you know, in that sense. You know, you would look at it as fairy tales, you won the princess. But he says that, I didn't do it for that. You know, I was just interested in this bow as it is, and anything further, I will not even discuss it unless my father comes here and he's informed about the whole thing. Because he says that, you know, it is their decision. This is, I am their responsibility and the decision is theirs. It is mine to just obey.
And that is why King Janaka immediately sends messengers and people to invite the kingdom of Ayodhya to the kingdom of Mithila. They are sent to convey this glad news, this wonderful news of Rama's feet to the King Dasharatha, and they set out to do the informing. And you know, the way Swami describes the meeting between Dasharatha and these messengers is also so beautiful.
Right, you know, we've spoken about how Vishwamitra described the family from which Rama and Lakshmana have come, and so now is a situation where Janaka is sending out emissaries to Dasharatha to invite him and, you know, to discuss this proposal. So he selects very carefully some people who are going to go and represent him to Dasharatha. And Swami explains it takes about 3 days, 3 or 4 days, driving on some fast chariots, they reach there. And this emissary goes in front of Dasharatha and he explains that he represents King Janaka and he's here for such and such a reason. And he explains what has happened in the court of Mithila. You know, Swami explains, when Dasharatha is looking at this emissary and the way he is carrying himself, he says that he must be representing a king who is of a very, very refined lineage.
Dasharatha deduces this simply based on the way this
emissary is carrying himself. So immediately even Dasharatha becomes very, very warm and treats this person very well, because he knows that he is representing a king who's almost equal to his stature. You know, that's a very important thing, again a very subtle lesson which is put in an episode in this Ramayana, where Swami is saying that when you represent somebody, how you should carry yourself.
You should carry yourself exactly like the way the person you are representing carries himself or herself. And so this emissary of Janaka is as polite, as humble, and as glorious and majestic as Emperor Janaka himself. That is why Dasharatha, even on just seeing and interacting with him for a few moments, knows that this is Janaka's man. It really inspires us if we want to call ourselves as Sai devotees and people of Sai, we should actually reflect what Sai is. And when people speak with us, or when they interact with us, they should get at least a part of the joy and thrill and awe that they would get when they interact with Swami himself. Because then alone will we be true messengers of Swami, true emissaries of Swami.
One day, I think Swami was talking to some students, and Swami was telling that how he wants, if you want to call yourself Swami students, if you want to call yourself as belonging to Swami, how you should behave. And it seems Swami was narrating that when those days in old Vrindavan, you know, boys used to stay in Vrindavan ashram. They were Swami students, but they used to study in the university in Bangalore. You know, you have to travel to the city every day and they would come back to the hostel. So Swami was saying that when these boys travel in the bus, it seemed those conductors would recognize these boys by their behavior. Mm-hmm. Swami said, these are Swami students. You know, because the conductor would, you know, with the number of days that these fellows had traveled in that bus, he had said that, you know, these boys will get up if an elderly person comes. These people will offer their seat if they see that somebody who is, you know, not able to stand. And this is what Swami would tell, that, see, this is how it should be. That when people see you, when the people see the way you behave, they should know that you belong to Swami. And, you know, when we say that we are Sai devotees, we all pride ourselves in saying that we are Sai devotees, but, you know, how are we carrying that name? You know, beautifully, Professor Kasturi used to say that, you know, we all are becoming Chatterjees. We need to become Banerjees. You know, where you carry the banner of Swami on you rather than go around talking about Swami, like what we are doing right now, I think.
Well, on that thought, dear listeners, I think the time in our studios is 1:58 and Brother Chandu is ready here for his next segment, Love to Love. So we will leave you with this thought. Not only leave you, we are leaving ourselves also with this thought on how we should actually live what Swami has taught us rather than just speak about what Swami has taught us. How we should lead our lives in such a manner so that anybody who is coming into our ambit gets to feel Swami's presence to an extent and gets to enjoy that bliss that they would enjoy when they are in Swami's presence, if not completely, at least partially. That should be our endeavor. With this, we bring this fortnight's Ramkatha Rasavahini to a close. We will be carrying on with the Ramkatha Rasavahini after one fortnight, and in that fortnight we will come to one of the most joyous and most Swami described episode, if we can call it so that way, that is Rama Sita Kalyanam. It is such a magnificent and beautiful episode, and it has so many inner meanings. We will dilate on all that when we meet for the Ramkatha Rasavahini after one fortnight.
So dear listener, we leave you with a song in Swami's own voice, Swami singing about his own avatar of Rama. And on the other side of the song, as we mentioned, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu and his special guest for the day.
Brahma Ra, Shiva Malo, Bhajamana Sai